This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're 6 months away from Election Day. It's April 12th, and the election of 2019 in Louisiana's October 19th. Believe it or not, just six shopping months away from governor's race and all these statewide offices, state legislative seats, they're all up for grabs, and it's been rather quiet for an election year. With us to talk about it in studio, the chairman of the Republican Rules Committee for the state GOP, Scott Wilfong. He's held that position for about 15 years.
Not anymore.
No, not anymore. No, really?
No, they made a change.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it maybe because of your appearances on this show?
Could have been, Jim, but I enjoy the company here a little better.
Well, you're still active with the GOP.
Yes, I'm still active.
Prominent Republican consultant who missed by an eyelash of being the Republican chair not so long ago.
That could have had something to do with it,
too. That could have had something to do with it. And Eddie Ashworth, who was with us years ago, when he was head of the Louisiana Budget Project. He's an active Democrat, retired from the Budget Project, where he was president from 2009 to 2011, also was involved intricately in the Tech Park, the research park at Baton Rouge from 2000 to 2008 as the CEO. Good morning to both of you gentlemen.
Good morning.
Do want to note that today being the 12th of April is the birthday of the legendary fry cook, warrior statesman, Frenchie Cox at Louis. So if you go into Louis this morning, be sure to wish Frenchie a happy 66th birthday.
It's also the birthday of Pam Sandoz, who owned Slinky's, if you are familiar with the former Slinky's bar by LSU.
Really?
Yep.
I did
it's
not
her birthday
know that.
Today.
And, of course, this was the day that Franklin Delano Roosevelt died in 1945. What a month we had in April of 45, the deaths of Roosevelt, Mussolini, and Hitler within 18 days, and it all happened in 1 month, which shows you sometimes history converges different places at the same time. 877-217-5757. Right now, the governor's race has been largely a yawner, and yesterday there was a debate, the Public Affairs Research Council, about as nonpartisan a group as you can imagine, with people on the left and right side of the political spectrum on their board. They held a debate, and only two of the candidates showed up. And some would think the incumbent would be the one likely not to show, but he was there. So was Ralph Abraham with his golden smile. But gone was Eddie Rasponi. What's going on, Scott Wilfong?
Well, I think I actually heard this, that originally it was booked a while back and Rasponi did commit and something changed. I think it was an honest mistake, honest crossing. I don't think Eddie was trying to dodge it or anything like that, but I think he had already booked an out-of-town event or whatever. But it was, from what I read about it, I wasn't there, but I read it got a little fiery between John Bell and Ralph Abraham.
Is it going to be a fiery race, or is this a foregone conclusion that the Democrat will win?
I mean, you know, if I was advising him, I mean, you can't take on an incumbent, I don't think, by running a mild-mannered, you know, polite race. You have to shoot at him. And so I can't imagine that it's not going to get fiery from – especially with two outsider candidates like that.
And I think it's interesting. You see John Bell Edwards is obviously in a position of strength because A-list GOP candidates didn't come out. Scalise didn't come out. Kennedy didn't come out.
Not yet.
No, not yet, but it's late in the ballgame.
Is that a possibility? And by the way, there are spots running. There have been for the last week or so with this government group, Citizens Against Government Waste. It's a quote, nonpartisan group, but we know it's a very right-of-center group, running spots praising John Kennedy for no particular reason as a man who's against government waste, which I think any of us are. But they're not running these spots because they want to, or they're running them because they have a goal in mind, and that goal may be to promote Senator Kennedy for some reason. And there is a governor's election in 6 months. There was wide speculation he would run. Any chance he'll get in, Scott?
You know, I don't think so. I think that there's, regardless of whether it's this year or not, John is not, I don't know his age, but he's
67.
He's a youthful 67, so he's certainly one of the futures of the party. So I think anytime you want, just it's the same reason the party would be building up like Jeff Landry. Jeff Landry's not running for governor, but he's going to do something in the future. So we want to, it's cultivating that. It's kind of the rising tide thing. We want to lift all the Republican candidates for whatever the future holds.
Okay, well, hold that thought, because for some of these Republicans who might run in 4 years, Landry, Garrett Graves, there are any number, but the list is probably 5 or 10 names. Those are two of the most prominent. They probably would benefit from a John Bel Edwards victory. They don't want to run against an incumbent Republican governor. They probably would not. So are they on the sidelines because they're just saying, okay, it's yours for the next 4 years, John Bel. We'll come after the office in 2023.
Well, look, I mean, in politics, left or right, all politicians are ultimately looking out for their own best interest. And certainly anyone would be happier to run for an open seat than they would be against an incumbent. So I think that's true no matter what seat you're looking for, even down ballot races. There are candidates looking for to run for attorney general, hoping that Jeff Landry will one day vacate that and run for governor or something. So that's just part of the game, is that everybody is looking mm-hmm. at where they'll be in 4 years or even 8 years.
All right. Yeah, I think numbers matter here too. I mean, John Bell's got good poll numbers and he's got good money and
$10 million.
Mm-hmm, those are two critical factors in the race. So.
All right, 877-217-5757 is your number, and you can send an email to talk@talklouisiana.org for Scott Wilfong and Eddie Ashworth on different sides of the political spectrum, both very passionate men. And Scott dropped a bit of a bombshell, saying he has been dismissed from the Republican Rules Committee chairmanship after 15 years, and Tracy at the Capitol says, what happened? How were you informed of this?
By text message.
By text message.
Well, Trumpian.
Well, the president can tweet out, you know, that he's fired Homeland Security. It's good enough for me. That's what I'll say.
Who texted you? Lewis Gerbich?
Yeah, Lewis. Lewis is all right. He and I get along fine.
Did he just say you're gone, or you're gone because of A, B, and C?
I think it was just a, you know, just felt like, I mean, it's his prerogative.
It's that old, we're moving in a different direction.
That might have been something like
that.
So
are you going to take him on when the time comes?
The way our party works, Lewis was, when we ran, it was middle term election, so it was the same committee. Qualifying for state central committee races is in December of this year. So right after the governor's race is over, both parties will be qualifying. So it'll be an entirely new committee.
Okay.
Literally any Republican in the state could become the next chairman because they can run for the seat now.
And if the race does not go well for governor, then I would imagine Chairman Gerbich would be held responsible.
I don't think it would be his fault, but I mean, certainly the coach of the football team gets blamed for the losses. So, you know, I think it'll just be voters will make a decision after the governor's race of who they want to lead mm-hmm. the party, and then we'll go from there next spring.
He's keeping a very low profile, not appearing in many media outlets at all. That's in certainly stark contrast to Roger Villery, who was here, there, and everywhere.
Yeah, I think Roger had a little bit of different perspective. Roger had run for office before himself. Lewis is more of a behind-the-scenes business owner. Good guy. You know, I think it's just and he's from New Orleans, which is, I mean, of course, Roger was from Metairie, but Roger had been involved in party politics for a long time. So, look, it's just hard. 2 years is the average term for a party chairman in America is like 8 months. It's amazing how quickly party chairmanships turn over. And in Louisiana, we've really broken that mold.
With Roger Villery.
With Roger Villery.
Maybe not with Lewis Gerbich.
Well, we'll see what Lewis wants to do. He's okay. A good guy.
And we have invited Lewis on this show, but as stated, he does not go on many programs of this kind, if any, to my knowledge. He's kind of the stealth chair. But he's not hanging out at casinos, as far as we know, either.
That's right.
877.
He's not getting thrown out of casinos, so that's a plus.
877-217-5757 is your number. talk@talklouisiana.org is our email for Eddie Ashworth and Scott Wilfong. Now, the session has started, and the governor yesterday, once again, he was talking about raising minimum wage, going for equal pay, two things he's tried 3 years in vain to get, and it would seem unlikely that that will happen in an election year. But Eddie Ashworth, has the time come?
Well, I think for minimum wage, we're long past the time. The current minimum wage hasn't been raised in any significant way for a long time. The value of the minimum wage, like the value of the gas tax in Louisiana, has decreased dramatically over time. You cannot raise a family on the minimum wage in Louisiana and in other states. So if we value work and if we value families, then we need to raise the minimum wage so people can have a living wage and be productive in their jobs.
Scott, $7.25 an hour. That's the rate in Louisiana. Arkansas just went to $11 an hour. It'll be rolling out incrementally, so it'll be, I think, about a year and a half before it's fully there. But they're already way ahead of us, and that state is certainly as poor or more poor than Louisiana. What's going on in our state?
Well, I guess I take a, you know, I've said on this show before, I take maybe a little bit different view from some conservatives. I don't believe there should be any federal minimum wage, but I do believe there should be a state minimum wage, and I just think that's better policy across the country. States are better equipped to know what the cost of living is and to set that. You know, I guess I don't have a problem. The devil's in the details. What, you know, do you want a $15 minimum wage and then, you know, we're paying, you know, paying $3 for a head of lettuce, or do you want, you know, do you want a more reasonable? That's why you elect a legislature, to make those kind of decisions. But I do like those type of decisions being made by people I can reach out and touch, like senators and representatives.
Went to a vote of the people in Arkansas, and it passed overwhelmingly. Perhaps make it a constitutional amendment. That might be one way to get it done. But, of course, that would take two-thirds support in both the House and Senate. And I think we can forget about that because of the power of LABI at the state capitol. 877-217-5757 is your number. We're back in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Matt Doyle is producing. Your number is 877-217-5757. We'll go to the phone lines in just a moment with Scott Wilfong, Republican, Eddie Ashworth, Democrat, and a story that we've talked about a few times in the last week. It was a week ago Thursday, as 8 days ago, the U.S. House voted 263 to 158 to reauthorize the Violence Against Women Act, but five of the six congressmen in Louisiana voted against it, including, of course, all the Republicans in the delegation, mainly because it would have thwarted Second Amendment rights to people convicted of domestic abuse. And 33 Republicans nationally voted for this measure, so it was not a case in which it was a party-line vote. But Eddie Ashworth, are you surprised, or is this pretty much expected in this climate?
Well, when the NRA came out against the act, it's no surprise that Republicans are going to vote against it, and particularly Republicans in southern states, and particularly Republicans in Louisiana. We have an epidemic of gun violence in this country, but yet NRA does not want any kind of regulation. I'm a gun owner. I've been a gun owner since I was a teenager, but I'm also a car owner. I don't want unregulated cars on the road, and I don't want unregulated guns in our society. And so we need to attack this issue. And domestic violence against women is a real thing. It's a devastating thing. And people convicted, not just charged, people convicted of stalking women, they should not be allowed to have guns. And for the NRA to take that position that they should is indefensible, I think.
Scott?
Well, I don't think that was quite the wording of the bill. I think there was some real question of whether people would be afforded due process before they would have their firearms rights taken away. And, you know, this is a typical example of bad messaging. Democrats, for 20 years, Dane Sherman, who's on this show with me a lot, will say the same thing as a Democrat. When are they going to figure out that gun control is a bad issue for them? If Democrats, the Violence Against Women Act, great, nothing wrong with the bill. Why do you want to group gun control in it? It's a losing issue. Every time the Democrats take out gun control, they lose. They lose nationally. They lose, especially in the South. And this is just one more example. I did not read the bill in its entirety, so I can't speak to the technicalities of it. But it wasn't as simple as just saying a person convicted of domestic. If you're convicted of a felony domestic violence, you can't own a firearm anyway. That's already there.
This would go beyond that, but 33 Republicans voted for it, and you're right. In the South, guns generally, it's an issue that Democrats run away from and Republicans embrace. And John Bel Edwards, he if he were in Congress, he might have voted with the five Republicans, Eddie Ashworth.
It may very well have. He is a gun owner. He supports gun rights, as do I. But on the other hand, we're talking about regulating gun rights, not taking guns away from people. And that's where the issue, I think, gets confused a lot of times. Interesting. I think to Scott's point, I think he's right about what's happening in the South. But you're seeing a change nationally. I think a number of Democratic presidential candidates now have come out against gun violence and want to regulate guns. That's a change. You remember Bernie Sanders in the previous election was in favor of gun rights. So we're seeing a change in the country, and I think the continue gun violence is just horrifying people, and I think it's continuing to move it in that direction.
And a listener notes that if Steve Scalise voted against this, a man who was shot with a high-powered weapon, Shouldn't that convince you, Eddie Ashworth, that this is an issue that's not as simple as I've stated?
No, I don't think that at all. I think that the people are fearful of the NRA and their political power. And if they want to be elected in the South, you cannot come out against guns.
Well, let's remember, apparently the Democrats are also fearful of Steve Scalise because they refused to let him testify on that last gun bill about a month ago. They would not even let a sitting member of Congress who had been shot speak on a bill. You can tell what they're afraid of the messenger.
Well, and Scalise led the charge. He not only voted with the gun lobby, but he led the charge against expanded background checks.
Well, I mean, don't forget, Steve Scalise's life was saved because there was somebody with a gun standing there at that baseball game. Thank God there was, you know.
Well, it was a woman who's married to another woman, and Steve Scalise is on the record as being against gay marriage, too. So sometimes there is hypocrisy in politics. Imagine that, Scott.
Imagine that. I cannot.
No.
Imagine that. 877-217-5757. Phil in Jefferson. Please be brief, Phil. You're on with Eddie and Scott.
Good morning. There was a piece of fake news that showed up on my Facebook page about a presidential candidate who was coming out to get your guns if he got elected president. This is nonsense, and the NRA is running scared. And
all right. Is this an issue that will have relevance next year, for example? Let's say it's Trump against Kamala Harris. Will guns be a major issue, Eddie?
No, I don't think it's going to be a major issue. I think it will be an issue, and it'll be a talking point in the debates. But I think people are on the far right and far left are pretty hardened in their positions. But in the middle, there's room for movement and change, I think.
It's all about the message. I mean, you know, I love how Democrats will say, you know, we've got a gun violence epidemic. Well, of course, I'm worried about gun violence. I'm against drowning puppies in a burlap sack. It's not about gun violence. Everybody agrees we need to stop that. It's do we take rights away from law-abiding citizens in order to somehow stop a criminal? I mean, if a well-worded sign on the outside of a bank doesn't stop a crazy man with a gun, what does? I mean, give me a break.
Well, why would you be able to buy a gun at a gun show without a background check, and you have to have a background check if you walk into a store?
Well, because you're talking about the regulation of a retail, just like we regulate all sorts of retail establishments.
It's not a transaction.
If you want to buy
at the Lamar Dixon Center.
If you want to buy a lemonade at Raising Cane's, they're regulated by the health department. If my little girl sells you a nickel cup of lemonade outside our house, what business is that a government?
Well, actually, it government has gotten involved in the
lemonade. They have gotten involved in the lemonade business. You're right.
David in Atlanta. Hello, David. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Last night in Georgia, a woman got out of her car momentarily, and while she was out of her car for a couple of minutes, her 5-year-old son took a gun out of the glove compartment, shot and killed their 4-year-old daughter. The woman will be charged with nothing. The authorities said it was an accident. In Florida, there's a bill. If that very same incident would have happened in Florida, the woman could have been charged with a felony and received 5 years. And in Florida, gun deaths by accidents, children are down 51%.
All right. Is that an example of gun regulation that you could live with, Eddie Ashworth?
I'm not real sure exactly what the regulation
well,
you're talking about, but
he's
I think
about
that
the difference
people
between
with
laws
guns,
different states.
People with guns should be held responsible for those guns. And so I have no problem with that woman being charged with, you know, some kind of negligent activity that led to that death.
And Scott, I'm sure you're in your Republican heart, you hope Democrats talk as much about guns as they can because you believe it's a winner for the Republican Party.
I do
politically.
Believe that, and you know, just the example that David just mentioned. I mean, you're talking about criminal negligence, but the woman's lost her child, or locking her up for 5 years. That's the answer. Is that going to stop the next negligent? Is someone really going to not be negligent because there's a possible criminal penalty for it? No, I don't see the connection there. If you're talking about a crime and taking guns away from someone who've proven they shouldn't be able to have them, I'm on board with you. If you're talking about putting someone in jail after the fact for a tragic accident, I don't see where that makes us safer.
Well, this is where we are in this country right now. Rather than looking at what is the right thing to do, what should we do, we're looking at the way, what's the politically most expedient thing or the political position that will most help my party, rather whether it's right or wrong. And that's, I think, where we need to back off from in this country right now.
Well, Scott's only with us for about another minute, and Eddie will be with us for most of the next segment. But, Scott, I am sorry that I understand, based on a text sent to me that this show apparently was the catalyst for your
I had a good run. I enjoyed it.
From the chairmanship.
I had a good run, and our terms end in less than a year anyway, so the party will be just fine without me.
Well, Scott is the future face of the Republican Party in Louisiana. I don't think there's any doubt that at some point he will probably be chair. How old are you, Scott?
42. I'll be 43 in a couple of weeks.
43. Both he and Eddie are workout guys. Does it bother you that we have a president who's in morbid obesity?
we had one named Bill Clinton, and he did.
He got in shape, though. He got in shape.
He's a vegan.
He's a vegan now? Well, I think he had to have a heart attack before
that
happened.
No, but his last physical when he was president, I just looked it up, by the way, he weighed 196.
Wow.
And he's the same height as Trump. And Trump, as we know, weighs allegedly 243 pounds.
No, he's more than that. Trust me. He's more than that.
You heard it.
And he's increased his height, too, so he's moving him off the scale.
Thank you, Scott Wilfong. We're back with Eddie Ashworth after this time out for the news on WRKF. This is Jim Engster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana, 877-217-5757. We're continuing our discussion with Eddie Ashworth, former president of the Louisiana Budget Project and former president and CEO of the Research Park. He's an avid Democrat and certainly was a worthy counter to Scott Wilfong. But we were talking about the president of the United States, who will be 73 years old on June 14th and is, I don't think there's any doubt, the most obese president we've had since William Howard Taft. But he also did not serve his country in Vietnam, and he's not alone. Many Americans didn't, and at that time, there were people from the right and the left who didn't want to fight. Some on the right, of course, thought it was a good idea to have the war as long as they did not participate. Eddie Ashworth is going to talk about his experience. He was born in 1948, 2 years after Presidents Trump, Bush, and Clinton, all of whom avoided service in Vietnam, as did Dick Cheney, who took 6 draft deferments, as did the President of the United States. Eddie Ashworth, is that a stain for somebody of your vintage, born in 1948, to have withheld their patriotism, at least to the point of not serving in that war?
I don't think so. Certainly not today after what has come out with regard to the war. McNamara's book and just shown that it was known by the Nixon administration and earlier that we were involved in a losing cause, and the reasons we were there were not the reasons that were being presented to us. And so it was it's just a horrible time in our country. It was a horrible time for those of us that were going through it.
And I was born a decade after you. So, by the way, this man is in fabulous condition to be 70 years old. He shocked me when he told me he was 70, but
I put him up to that.
Yeah, so I never had to make that decision of dodging a draft. I don't know what I would have done. I like to think I would have gone over and done my patriotic chore, but I don't know. But Richard Baker, born the same year as you, 1948, congressman from this district for 22 years. When he was campaigning for Dan Quayle, that was an issue because Quayle had basically found a way to avoid going to Vietnam by being in the Indiana National Guard. Many guardsmen were called over there, but there were some units that you were pretty much immune, like the unit Quayle was in, the unit George Bush was in. And here was Richard Baker in the year of 1988 talking about his experience in avoiding service in Vietnam. Do we have it? Okay, let's see if we can. Nope, I'll tell you what. Well, Richard's apparently choked up about this, so let's let's save him for later. But he was talking about he was 326 when that draft. Remember the? I know you remember because I remember. They had the actually 1 through 365. It was televised. It's like the NFL draft. A lottery, and he was 326. What was your number, Eddie?
My number was 10, and I was working while I was in undergraduate school, I was working full-time at the Birmingham Post-Herald, which was Alabama's largest morning newspaper at the time. And so I was there on that night working on the copy desk and watching it come in over the teletype. And I think, as I was telling you earlier, when my number came up, I rode a motorcycle back then, and when 10 came up, I threw my motorcycle helmet so hard across the room that I broke it open, which is a very difficult thing to do. So yeah, it was a traumatizing experience that night.
Well, how did you stay out with a number like that?
A number like that, I avoided. I got three draft notices. I eventually, through the help of my father, who was friends with, he was a businessman in Childersburg, Alabama. The local banker had political influence, was able to get me into the National Guard. I got in the National Guard, and then before I could actually go into my six-month active duty service, I actually failed the physical. So it's I ended up 4F.
4F. So you got out?
I was out.
Legitimately.
So I've been,
but you were probably happy you were out, too.
I was happy I was out. I was opposed to the war, but am not opposed to war in general. So I was not qualified to be a conscientious objector. I have enormous respect for those who were COs because they were harshly talked about by people in the country, but because of their conscience. I had one of my law partners in Washington, D.C., served the longest time in prison for refusing to draft. He was a Quaker. He tried to get conscientious objector status. He was denied in North Carolina and went to prison for his conscience. And so he was in prison for over 4 years. And so it was an interesting interview when he came to interview for us. Mm-hmm. You know, as you go through the interview and you run down the resume, and he's got this four-year gap. And so I said, Bill, you know, what happened during these 4 years? I was in prison. So that invited a much longer and interesting conversation.
My goodness. It was a terrible time in our country.
Yes.
And certainly we salute those who were wounded, those who gave their lives. And as a result of the fact that it was a generational choice, it would seem that those who run for the highest office in the land who were susceptible to service in Vietnam then and got out by virtue of bogus ways like bone spurs, that they would not be in a position where they would have the authority to send men and women off to wars of which they probably would not fight in if they had the opportunity to do so on behalf of the United States of America. But the president did, and he didn't stop there. He criticized a man who served 5.5 years
yes.
in a prison camp in Vietnam. And it is amazing that he has been able to withstand this, I think, above any other scandal, Stormy Daniels, any of the others. It's amazing that he's been able to withstand this, because John McCain was the real deal, and he didn't deserve, and even in death, he's being
vilified.
Yeah.
It's a horrible time in our country. Hypocrisy, obviously, knows no bounds, but it just demonstrates where the politics have gone in our country. It's just a terrible thing. There's not much else to be said about that, I don't think.
Well, Eddie Ashworth, thanks for being a good servant to the state of Louisiana and for being on this show today. Appreciate
Thank you very much
it.
For Thank having you. Me.